the obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Dan Ball on WEEI.
One and two. Pitch. To the backstop. Narvaez has no chance, and a wild pitch is going to give Arizona the lead. That was a changeup that was absolutely to the moon, and the Snakes have a one-run lead.
Oink! Oink!
Good afternoon, and welcome into WEEI. Dan Ball with you just after 4 o'clock here on Saturday, September the 6th, 2025. Pleasure to be with you. I tell you what, I'm kind of glad that the Red Sox are on the road this weekend, because looking out at the way the sky's looking, if they're playing at Fenway Park, we may be waiting around a while. But the Red Sox are indeed on the road, game two of a six-game road trip coming up later on this evening. I'll have you for the pregame show beginning at 7:10. Lucas Giolito and Brandon Pfaadt is your pitching matchup out in Arizona. That game following up what was certainly an underwhelming second start in the career of Peyton Tolley, which we are talking about here on WEEI. And we're talking with you at 617-779-7937. You can join us via call and via text to chime in on the conversation. Later on in the show, we're talking with Paul Hembikides, who was a part of the Get Up crew on ESPN. He is also a member of the Baseball Tonight podcast with Buster Olney out there on ESPN. We're talking with him about the Red Sox and Major League Baseball at 4:30. Coming up at 5:30, we'll pivot over to the NFL and talk with ESPN Radio's Freddie Coleman, host of Freddie and Harry 3-7 weekdays on ESPN Radio, his thoughts on the Patriots and Drake May, and where they stand within an AFC playoff picture that certainly has more questions than answers. I think you look AFC and NFC, and the NFC has the powerhouses, where AFC, you have to worry about the Bills, have to worry about the Ravens. I guess maybe you throw in the Bengals, at least their offense, but past that, some questions abound. So that's coming up later on the show here on WEEI. Hello to those listening on the flagship here, 93.7 WEEI in Boston, as well as those joining us on our great affiliates across New England on the Cape, Providence, Rhode Island, Springfield, Mass, Worcester, Portland, Keene, New Hampshire, Claremont, New Hampshire, and White River Junction, Vermont. If you're not joining us on any of those, you're probably listening on the free Odyssey app. Make sure you download that if you haven't already. That's AUDACY. We begin with the Boston Red Sox and Peyton Tolley. And you've seen a couple of unbelievable rookie debuts for the Boston Red Sox this season. And I know that the first of which is currently down in AAA and seems to have no clear path back to Major League Baseball right now. But even your first rookie debut in Christian Campbell was the rookie of the month in Major League Baseball in April. Nothing compared to Roman Anthony making his debut at Fenway Park. The standing ovation, family and the sister and everybody watching along as Anthony made his debut and quickly became a top 15, top 20 player in Major League Baseball.
And
before
you can't
he was
take your eyes off his mom.
And I don't think anybody has since Will Fleming, but you have that. Marcelo Meyer came in, had some fits and spurts, and unfortunately ended up getting hurt. So his season was cut short, about a .220 hitter in Major League Baseball. But then came Peyton Tolley, and I don't quite know what it is, but Tolley, when you watch him on the mound and you watch the way he operates and you watch the way that he just kind of goes about his preparations and goes about life on the mound, he just felt different, didn't he? And Brian Frazoka, who was riding with me behind the glass this afternoon, played the oink oink, because the nickname that came for Peyton Tolley before his first start, when we were talking with Lou Merlone ahead of one of the Jimmy Fund telethon days, was the Piglet, which was to suggest that Peyton Tolley had a little bit of the Garrett Crochet type makeup, where you're a dog out there, you're working, you're not only working, but it just looks like nothing bothers you. And I was incredibly impressed at the way that Peyton Tolley carried himself on that first game at Fenway. Because you got to think about all the different variables that were going on during his first start. Obviously, it's your Major League debut. That's intimidating in and of itself when you're debuting for the Red Sox in the middle of a pennant race. So that's one. It's a Fenway Friday in the City Connect, which has become the must-attend event in Boston sports this summer. Amazing where that has come from season's beginning until now. And you're warming up in the bullpen, and you have the probably unanimous, if you took a vote, best pitcher in baseball in Paul Skenes, and his wonderful girlfriend, Olivia, warming up in the bullpen adjacent to you. That is about as big of a stage for a highly regarded prospect pitcher to make his career debut.
And I like what Bradfoe said with WEI Afternoons yesterday, where he said that was probably the first time in Paul Skeen's life where he wasn't the story going into a game.
Yeah, amazing, isn't it? And you got this guy with this big old luscious mustache, this big hoss of a lefty, hoss of the week caliber lefty, Jones and Keefe, who loves his New Balance dad sneakers and striking people out. And he goes out there and shoves. And you couldn't help but come away with a lot of positives from his first start against the Pirates. Now, you have to take a couple things for granted. He was facing the worst offense in baseball. So it was certainly a nice landing spot for Peyton Tolley to make his debut. But the way he was able to pound the zone, the way he was able to dominate with the fastball, the one thing that jumped out, if you really went in and looked at the way that he executed his first outing is, boy, oh boy, he threw a lot of fastballs. It was fastball cutter, I think more than 80% of the time. So the question then became, in 1 week's time, because the Red Sox went through their whole bullpen game debacle on Wednesday in order to get him the day off to then have him pitch 1 week from his first start yesterday. The question for me was going to be, okay, so what happens in game two in terms of the way that he uses his pitch arsenal? That was a big question for me. So you saw more of the usage of the curveball. You saw a little bit more of the changeup. And you just saw a guy who was struggling to find the zone. And, you know, the highlight from the ever so devastated when the Red Sox are losing Will Fleming tells you that there were just too many pitches and too many at-bats yesterday from Tolley that were non-competitive. So you came away from the first two starts, at least for me, you come away with, oh my God, this kid has all the potential talent and tools in the world, but he's far from a finished product. And that's not necessarily what I wanted to see for a guy who was already being heralded as a key part of this team's hopes in September, then into October. You didn't want to see, oh, well, there's still kind of a lot to be desired in terms of the way that he uses his secondary pitches. So where does Peyton Tolley leave the Boston Red Sox? Before we get to that, Brian, I wanted to get your thoughts. Tolley threw two starts. Obviously, that first game was incredible. And you talked a bit about that and what Bradfoe said in terms of the stage and how he was able to perform. But I'm curious to get thoughts from you as well at 617-779-7937. Your takeaways from Tolley through two games as a member of the Boston Red Sox. But Brian, your thoughts on game two after game one. Still, are we still feeling good? There's a lot still that's up there. We'll get to that in just a moment. But where does that leave the Boston Red Sox? That's the main question that you have to wonder with in this perspective, because your number one pitcher, Garrett Crochet, your ace, your pig, the guy that you have leaned on extremely heavily this season, all of a sudden now you've started to see a little bit less of the use of the fastball, started to rely on the sinker and some of the secondary stuff a little bit more. Velocity is still, at least from an average perspective, still up where it should be, but are you completely comfortable with the trend of Crochet? I'm not completely worried, but it's on my radar. You have to at least have it on your radar an outing that goes the way it does, where he sets a career high in terms of home runs given up and is giving up the kind of hard contact that he did. It's at least on your radar, because he's fully in new territory as an ace on a playoff team. Even just that's new to him, but the innings total that we're talking about, that's new. And the pressure that rides with each start, that is new as well. So Crochet to Bayo, who to me, honestly right now, and I never thought that we'd get to this point, of all the pitchers that we talk about in Boston, Bayo gives me the most confidence right now. That's probably crazy to say, because I know Crochet's top-end stuff is still beyond reproach, and I am fascinated to see what October Crochet potentially could look like. But Bayo has been Mr. Consistency since the beginning of June. Six innings and three runs has all of a sudden become the floor for Brian Bayo. I am endlessly impressed with how the Red Sox have been able to do two things with Bayo this season. That's fix the mechanics, Move him just pitching out of the stretch so that every single delivery is repeatable. Same thing after same thing after same thing. It all looks the same for Brian Baio this season. So the mechanics are back in shape. And then the biggest thing that was going to keep him from being great, the battle between his ears. All of a sudden, as he's matured, grown into what he is, which is not Pedro Martinez, but a very good number two to number three pitcher in this league, the mental battle that it seemed like Baio was losing so often last year, he's winning. So I'm fine there. Lucas Giolito has, if the season ended today, would set his career low for ERA in a season in which he's pitched at least 10 games at a 3.38. That is crazy coming off of a lost year last year and then a post-trade deadline where he got traded to the Angels, was unpitchable, got released, then picked up by the Guardians, and then was worse. He had two separate ERAs of seven with those two teams, which is crazy. Seven. So that was the sample size that you had when you signed Giolito. Then he got hurt. Then he loses a year. Then he comes back. And then in the post-Roman Anthony era, at least, he's been incredible. Had an ERA under three, around 2.4, I think it was, in the month of August. He definitely walked the tightrope. I was at the game last Sunday, sick brag, I know. His last start.
Sick brag, bro.
Against the Pittsburgh Pirates. And he walked four or five guys. I think it was five guys.
I think it was five, yeah.
Yeah. And it was the second game of the month where he had walked at least five guys. But he only gave up one run, six innings, kept it under 100 pitches. He walked the tightrope, but he got out of it and gave you a quality start and a chance to win the ball game. And then you did. So that's your three. Crochet, all right, something's on the radar a little bit. Baio, I feel great about. And then Giolito, again, you're just talking about a guy who hasn't pitched this level of inning load now in 2 years with a significant injury separating those performances. Then my question becomes, the hell do you do next? Where do I go from there? Tolley will, I'm assuming, remain a part of this mix for the rest of the regular season, mainly because you don't have another choice. But then what? Who's my number five at this point? Why didn't we see Kyle Harrison this week? Is really what my question comes down to with that fifth spot in the rotation. I know the reporting is that he's been nursing an ankle injury. So why have him drive to Boston, spend the night on Tuesday, then on Wednesday decide, you know what? We're going with Bernie tonight. We're going with Bernie and Jordan Hicks in the first inning tonight.
Do you think they sort of got scared off by the ankle? They wanted him 100% before he makes their debut, especially considering how bad Jordan Hicks has looked so far.
Yeah.
And if Kyle Harrison struggles, let's just say, even in his first start, are people getting the pitchforks and torches already for the return of the Rafael Devers trade? Because I think people are already ready to do that.
Yeah.
And if you throw the last piece of that, you know, immediate trade, players that can immediately help your team, and he goes out and struggles, and everyone's going to be like, so what was the point of even trying to get anything for Devers? At that point, you may as well have just cut him, because Hicks has been, I think, a net negative to the team. I heard Nick LaPan say on the Midday Show the other day, you would have gotten more for Devers if you just cut him. Like, Hicks has been a negative.
Yeah.
And then if Kyle Harrison sucks, then I think a lot of fans can look at it and say, wow, you really, really botched this trade in terms of the immediate players you got back, in terms of their impact that they could have for you this season.
I hope that's not the case, that they were weighing public perception like that, but I wouldn't be surprised if that was at least a factor.
Knowing the Red Sox, it was probably in there.
And you know, you hope that it was. That's a very good point, by the way. That's a PR conscious group if I've ever seen one. However, you also want to do right by the player, and I'm hoping that those two things are kind of independent of each other, that they wanted to make sure that he, pun intended, had his best foot forward when he made his first start in Boston. And they, you know, you get major league level medical staff to evaluate the ankle, and maybe you determine, all right, this kid is a little bit worse than we were led to believe by our AAA staff, and so we don't feel comfortable enough to do that. But To go out there and willingly put a bullpen game together and then get to Dustin May in like the sixth or seventh inning, like just start the damn kid. If we're going to worry about trades, if I'm going to worry about, oh, the optics of Kyle Harrison sucking in his first start being a piece of the Rafael Devers trade, well, then you might as well sit in the fact that you traded James Tibbs for Dustin May and just start the kid and see if maybe he can harness a little bit of what was happening at the beginning versus the end. So I say all of that to say this. You have three starters, and you've known this for a while. You have three starters that you can rely upon and that have proven that they deserve your trust. You are currently missing Tanner Houck, Carter Crawford, Patrick Sandoval, Hunter Dobbins, Cooper Criswell, and Dickie Fitz. Those are the names that you are currently without, which is why we're having conversations about Peyton Tolley. I wrote May as spelled Drake May in my notes, but Dustin May, and then Kyle Harrison to fill out the rotation, unless you start going with these bullpen games. It's just a bit of a bizarre way that Craig Breslow has left this team, knowing what he knew about the lack of pitching depth at the trade deadline. That's all that I would say about that, is that it's another example of the inactivity at the trade deadline and how it's negatively impacting the Boston Red Sox, and why, as September goes along, I'd rather not have three of my five starters known, one be a top prospect that's clearly still figuring out some of the mechanics at the major league level, and the other be wide open with no real strong answer at the moment, as we talk about a team that is safely in a wild card spot right now, but is losing some bizarre games, and really losing games that I think a championship caliber team wouldn't let slip away. There was an interesting stat that came out from the end of the last homestand, where despite the fact that the Red Sox had won, you know, X amount of series or X amount of homestands, they had lost the final game of three straight homestands against the Royals and the Guardians, and the last one being the Orioles. Like, it was just it was teams that you kind of need to be able to put the clamps on. And you can point to individual decisions. You can point to rotation inconsistencies. You can point to a lot of things to it. But the Peyton Tolley start proved that he is a really, really talented kid who still has a long way to go. And that's okay. But my main point by saying all of that is I can't be relying as heavily as the Red Sox are about to on a guy that's still an unfinished product. So if I have a guy every fifth day who's kind of figuring out my arsenal as a major league pitcher, like I can't have Peyton Tolley having an opponent batting average of 1,000 against his changeup. That's not something that that makes me feel great about the state of the rotation right now. I can't have a 500 batting average with 39 cutters thrown. I need a little bit better than that. Or I need the Red Sox to be adapting this on the fly and putting him in situations where he can throw his best pitches at the right moments. So we'll see. There's certainly an opportunity for a bounce back. He wasn't going to be Skeens level his entire career. I think that's fair to say. There was going to be a welcome to the MLB moment for Peyton Tolley at some point, and it happened yesterday in Arizona. 617-779-7937 is the phone number if you'd like to join us. We're talking Red Sox baseball here in the 4 o'clock hour. We'll continue to do that with Paul Hambakidis from ESPN. Get up in the Baseball Tonight podcast coming up at 4:30. We'll talk specifically about Roman Anthony with Hembo. He just did an episode with Buster Olney talking about the Roman Anthony impact, if he had ever seen a rookie have the impact that Roman Anthony had during his first couple months as a member of the Boston Red Sox. So that is coming up next after Brian Frazoco gets you caught up on what's trending.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? The real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks. The three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
And ball on WEEI.
Runner in scoring position. Oh, man. at least it's not bases loaded. It's just a man on second. Maybe we can get him in.
Pitch. Roman drives one. High and deep and gone! Roman reigns supreme in Gotham. That is a hit with runners in scoring position. A signature moment for Anthony. And it is 6-3. Red Sox.
Lean back.
Will Fleming, Lou Maloney, I'd listen to them wherever they go. Poor Will Fleming, man. He was dealing. It is such a helpless feeling when you talk for a living and you have laryngitis going on, and you could hear that in his voice. And he was having a whole conversation with Will Middlebrooks about the throat coat tea, and Will was dealing with that the way that most children would when they hear that name. 617-779-7937. We'll be joined by Paul Hembikides of ESPN in just a couple of moments. Two quick things to get to before we get to Hembo. First of all, lineups out for today. And this is something I thought I'd never have to read and be serious about it. Leadoff hitter at designated hitter. No, it's not Roman Anthony. No, it's not Roman Gonzalez. No, it's not Jaron Duran. Leadoff hitter Masataka Yoshida tonight for the Boston Red Sox. Bregman, Duran, Story, Lowe, Gonzalez, Narvaez, Rafaela, and Eaton behind Lucas Giolito. Leadoff hitter Masataka Yoshida is not a thing that I thought I'd get to say in 2025, but that tells you the impact of not having Roman Anthony available. You, for once, had one spot in your lineup. You had two spots in your lineup that were written in pen. I checked the number on Wednesday, so it's definitely up from now. But as of Wednesday, the Red Sox had used 115 different lineups this season. Alex Cora had deployed 115 different lineups this season. So the one that was finally starting to have a little bit of consistency was one with Roman Anthony at the top, and now that is no longer the case. Joining us right now here on WEEI, a member of the Get Up crew on ESPN, and also a member of the Baseball Tonight podcast across the ESPN podcast network, Paul Hembikides. You may know him as Hembo. Hembo, great to talk to you. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. It's always good to hear a voice, my friend. You do a great show. I love talking ball with you, as you know.
Ah, thank you very much. Well, I appreciate that, and it's always a pleasure to be able to get to catch up with you. And you were top of mind for me, Hembo, earlier this week because you and Buster Olney were talking about Roman Anthony and the true tragedy that befell the Boston Red Sox, losing him to an oblique injury for the next 4 to 6 weeks at minimum. So I watched your clip and the way you guys broke that down, but what is the impact for the Red Sox not having Roman Anthony at the top of that lineup?
Considerable. I would not describe it as a kill shot. I would, however, describe it as a body blow and a painful one at that, not just because of the obvious. You lose good player, hurts the team, but because of the manner in which he was impacting the run scoring in your lineup on a daily basis, hitting at the top of it. As you well know, you saw the enormous impact that he was having hitting leadoff for a lineup that was really coming on, in large part because of how successfully he was setting the table. An OPS of over 1,000 in the leadoff position this year with a minimum of something like 50 plate appearances. I mean, he was literally the best leadoff hitter by that standard of measure in the entire American League. I mean, it's not my opinion. I mean, Roman Anthony as the leadoff hitter for the Boston Red Sox was matching, and that's an enormous responsibility. And when you're able to have someone OPSing 1,000 in the leadoff spot, especially someone that you don't really have to mix and match because he does hit lefties, which is another rarity for a player that young that hits from the left side, it just provides you such a head start every single game. I think there was back-to-back nights in Baltimore that we saw leadoff home runs, if I'm not mistaken, that just jolts the offense in such a considerable way. And when you can combine the slug that he was demonstrating with the swing decisions that we have always known that he has, I'm just not sure there was a player that you were less equipped to lose, maybe aside from Garrett Crochet, than Roman Anthony. In fact, I would go as far as to say, Bud, that at the time in which he got injured, if you had asked me, gun to my head, who's going to win the American League this year, I would have told you the Boston Red Sox, because I loved the way the team had been building throughout the season and figuring out its starting rotation and cementing its bullpen and finally getting the lineup ducks in a row. But losing the leadoff hitter from a team is just such a significant blow. I think there's enough depth right now that the Red Sox have the ability to still cruise into the postseason. I really do. But I think how well and how quickly he responds to this injury and how impactful he can impact the baseball, for lack of a better term, once he does come back, I think that's ultimately going to be the biggest question that the Red Sox need to answer in terms of their aspirations for high-level winning.
On the topic of the at-bats and the swing decisions, because that certainly jumps off the page when you watch Roman Anthony's game, do you remember seeing a rookie that has used their at-bats and has gone through their at-bats at a level with the maturity that Roman Anthony has, despite being 21, 22 years old? Do you remember any player working like that?
So Alex Cora, a couple weeks back, said something to the effect of, he reminds me of Soto, which is something that is almost sacrilegious
right.
by baseball terms, because Juan Soto has been put in the same sentence, in my opinion, incorrectly, but in the same sentence as Ted Williams in terms of the at-bat quality, in terms of his swing decisions, his strike zone discernment. I mean, Juan Soto, as you well know, is just a ruthless at-bat.
Right.
And, you know, he is, like, the floor is top 10 hitter on earth, and when he slugs, it's the best hitter on the planet. That's how good Juan Soto is. So I was comping Roman Anthony to Kyle Tucker when he was called up, but his swing decisions are better than that. I mean, I think Juan Soto is actually the most appropriate comp, not necessarily as good as, I'm not necessarily equating, but I can compare without equating, and that I think is actually the best comparison to make. For a 21-year-old to have a 13% walk rate is almost unprecedented. It's super rare, and it's the highest since Juan Soto. For his chase rate, just the percentage of pitches that he swings at outside the strike zone, to be as low as it is, the lowest by any player at 21 since Juan Soto. And when you couple that skill, an extraordinary one, with the fact that 6 out of 10 balls he puts into play, he does so at 95-plus miles an hour, we're talking about rare stuff, rare skills, rare ability. Like, I think what we often do in Major League Baseball is we'll take some cross-section of young players and lump them in a bucket and say these are ascending stars within the sport. And
right.
I don't like doing that because Roman Anthony's better than all the rest. I mean it when I say it. This is the one. Like, this is a player who, for example, had he not signed the extension, he's the next $500 million player. He's the next $700 million player. He is the Hall of Fame talent. I feel confident in saying so because there isn't a blemish in the profile. There's not one. I'm telling you, bro, if he can improve his angles, his ability to elevate the baseball with some regularity, which is usually the kind of thing that happens in a player's mid to late 20s,
right.
This is an MVP. This is a player on a Hall of Fame trajectory. And I'm not one who's prone to hyperbole, but I'm also one who's prone to delivering exactly the information and the opinion that my eyes and the back of the baseball card tell me. And that's what it's telling me.
Certainly music to my ears as a Red Sox fan. But Paul Hembakitis of ESPN joining us here on WEEI. You can follow him on Twitter at Paul Hembo if you don't already. Catch him on Get Up as well as the Baseball Tonight podcast. And if you're looking for a gift, I know it's a little early to talk about the Christmas and holiday season, but you can get his collaborations with Mike Greenberg, Got Your Number and Got Your Answers in bookstores right now. So you talk about the Red Sox still being a playoff caliber team. They were apparently your American League favorite with Roman Anthony, but still team to watch in the American League. What else intrigues you specifically about the offense of the Boston Red Sox that gives you that kind of confidence?
The mixing and matching. So look, I did a video, I don't know, maybe a month ago or so now, in which I think did the very best I could to articulate why the Red Sox traded an excellent player in Rafael Devers and still got better because of the cascading effects. In short, Rafael Devers is one of the dozen or so best hitters on earth, and everyone acknowledges the fact that the Red Sox distressed their own asset, traded him for 50 cents on the dollar. That being said, that's a story that Red Sox fans have seen before, most notably in 2004, as you well know. And so, not to necessarily compare those situations like for like, but what trading Rafael Devers did, as you well know, is provide Alex Cora with way more optionality than he had otherwise. And the ability to put Rob Refsnyder in to just bang against lefties is so valuable. And the ability for him to move Seydon Rafaela from center field to second base in a whim is so incredibly valuable, and so on and so forth. And it's not that often that a team has the ability to roll out a different starting lineup basically every single night based upon matchups, based upon platoons, and based upon the fact that every hitter in the lineup is rowing in the same direction. And that's a big component to the Red Sox this season. There's a lot less I and there's a lot more we. And that's a really big deal in baseball, because even though these are individual at-bats and matchups, me versus you, there is still a team component to this. There is still a complementary winning component to this that the Red Sox have now mastered. Their defense has improved considerably, despite the fact that Rafael Devers was not playing defense. But the fact that he was log-jamming the designated hitter position was a huge deal, because you couldn't necessarily mix and match your defenses and your platoons accordingly, because you obviously just needed to put him in the lineup and DH him every single day, and then you figure out the other eight spots. Well, now all of a sudden, you have a Swiss Army knife lineup. So to me, that ultimately is what the next month is going to look like for the Boston Red Sox. Without Roman Anthony hitting at the top of the lineup, how successfully can Alex Cora craft his starting lineups on a daily basis to ensure that he's maximizing his run scoring output now because he doesn't have the best leadoff hitter in the American League anymore. To me, from 30,000 feet, I don't watch every single at bat like you do, but from 30,000 feet, how much can Ellis score? How much value can he extract out of this lineup considering the injury to Roman Anthony?
Hembo, on the other side of the coin in the American League, Garrett Crochet has been exactly what Red Sox fans were hoping that he would be, which is a Cy Young candidate. Could you make the case for Crochet as a Cy Young winner, or is there too much competition around him?
I'm so glad that you asked, because I was giving strong consideration to texting you this afternoon and saying, I need you to ask me this question because I have a strong opinion on it.
Okay.
So I decided not to lead the horse to water, but you led me there anyway.
Okay.
I'll say this as straightforwardly as I can. I hope nobody in Detroit is listening. Garrett Crochet is the Cy Young Award winner in the American League. And if I had a vote, I do not have a vote, I would cast it for Garrett Crochet. Now, plenty can change in the next 3 weeks. But I want to do the very best I can without, diluting the conversation to explain to you how I think elementary, how reductive, how unsophisticated so many of our awards conversations are. Typically, what we'll do is just reduce everybody to the surface level statistics on Baseball Reference or FanGraphs that you happen to value, and then you just argue around those. And the reason I'm not here for it is because we have the ability to be so much smarter, so we should be smarter. And so if the smart information told me that Tarek Skubal was the Cy Young Award winner, I would present that case and tell you that I think Garrett Crochet should finish second. But that's not the case to make. That's not the smart case to make. The smart case to make is that starting pitchers, unlike position players, have a very different profile in terms of the hitters that they face 30 or 32 times a year. So in a hitter's case, right, you come to the plate 600 times in a season. And so on balance, you're going to see the approximate same level of pitching league-wide. So if you're comparing MVP candidates, let's say an outfielder for the Angels versus the shortstop for the Royals, just as an example, on balance, they're going to have seen approximately the same quality of pitching across the board. That is not the case when it comes to starting pitchers. You're talking about 200 innings, and the opponents that you are facing are obviously largely division-driven. So what I did was merely look up the performance of Garrett Crochet and Tarek Skubal, basically against the top third of the league and the bottom third of the league when it comes to just how good the lineups you faced were. And the overwhelming evidence says that Tarek Skubal, his numbers are off the charts. But if you weight them in terms of opponent quality, Garrett Crochet comes out first by a lot. If you look at this, like the top third lineups in the league,
right,
Garrett Crochet has like 20 more innings with comparable results, whereas the bottom third of the league, Tarek Skubal very much pads his stats. This is not nefarious, but Tarek Skubal very much pads his stats against some of the very worst lineups in baseball, of course, because those reside in the American League Central. It is profoundly unfair to penalize Garrett Crochet for pitching primarily against American League East opponents. As simply as I can put it, if you're going to put Tarek Skubal above Garrett Crochet on your Cy Young ballot, I'm good with it. But you're going to have to explain to me. You're going to have to explain to me how these guys have produced comparable numbers despite facing very different lineups on a consistent basis. I feel strongly in saying so. And as probably like a month or so from now, I think you'll hear me come out a lot more strongly once we have the full set of data arguing in favor of Garrett Crochet because he did more with better competition.
Well, I certainly look forward to hearing that argument again because I enjoyed it the first time. And make sure you follow along at Paul Hembo so you can follow the content ahead of the MLB playoffs, and make sure you download the Baseball Tonight podcast. Catch him on GetUp on ESPN as well. Hembo, quickly before we let you go, talking a bunch about the Red Sox, but who are the other teams that intrigue you most in the American League, and where do the Red Sox fall in the power ranking of the AL as you see it?
So you could ask me that question 3 days from now, and the answer would be different than it is right now.
Fair.
I feel, candidly, that the strongest teams in the American League right this second are the Yankees, the Red Sox, and the Houston Astros. That's not going to be an answer that a lot of the small market team fans like to hear, but the Yankees have the best lineup. I think the Red Sox with Roman Anthony have the best collection of players, the most ways to beat you, and the Astros with Yordan Alvarez coming back and the starters that they have in their rotation with all the muscle memory of having succeeded, I think definitely have a strong case to be made. But ultimately, the best way I can put it is this, my friend. It's not going to be about how good you are. It's going to be about how hot you are when it comes to the American League playoffs. You're not going to be looking at season-long data sets and saying, like, oh, this team's slightly better than this one. No. It's going to be how good were you down the stretch? How healthy are your starting pitchers? How effectively is your lineup rowing in the same direction? These are going to be the kind of things that you look at. Basically, how good were you since the trade deadline, and how many different ways can you win? That's the question, ultimately, that the best teams in baseball answer, because as we've learned, a lot of these power-first teams can get you there, but they can't figure out how to manufacture runs in a 4-2 game in the playoffs. A lot of teams have starting pitching that can get you to the sixth inning, but all of a sudden it crumbles. A lot of teams have a dynamite bullpen, but it doesn't matter if you're not building a lead, of course. So the Red Sox are the team that can answer the most questions in the affirmative, but I'm telling you, I do think that Roman Anthony is a critical enough piece to where I'm not going to be ready to proclaim them as my favorite to win the American League pennant unless I have a little bit more information down the line.
He is Paul Hembekaitis of ESPN joining us here on WEEI. Hembo, always a pleasure to be able to catch up. Enjoy the stretch run in Major League Baseball. All the best to you and your family. We'll do it again soon.
You're a good man.
That is Paul Hembekaitis. Notice Hembo joining us here on ESPN talking about the Boston Red Sox. We'll react to his thoughts on Garrett Crochet and his Cy Young chances because that was about the best argument in favor of Crochet that I've heard yet. We'll do that next.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? The real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? The three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Dan Ball on WEEI.
It is profoundly unfair to penalize Garrett Crochet for pitching primarily against American League East opponents, as simply as I can put it. If you're going to put Terrence Skubal above Garrett Crochet on your Cy Young ballot, I'm good with it. But you're going to have to explain to me. You're going to have to explain to me how these guys have produced comparable numbers despite facing very different lineups on a consistent basis. I feel strongly in saying so. And as probably like a month or so from now, I think you'll hear me come out a lot more strongly once we have the full set of data arguing in favor of Garrett Crochet because he did more with better competition.
That was the voice of Paul Hembekaitis of ESPN. Get up in the Baseball Tonight podcast, joining us here on WEEI, giving an impassioned speech for Garrett Crochet winning the Cy Young Award. Do you want
think
to catch
someone
that?
Has money on that?
Oh my God, no kidding, right? And I wish I could present, get to a point in life at any point where I can present stats at that velocity that he does. But that's why he is built different. And as much as I want to agree, and I think he made a great case, and I think if you give more weight and more value to the opponents that are being faced and just the stage on which they are pitching, then he's right, and Crochet's your winner. But unfortunately, the easy stats, and I put, I guess, easy in quotes, I mean, Skubal's going to win.
It is profoundly unfair.
And maybe it is, but Skubal is also having a profoundly unfair season, just with the easy stats that people who vote for these kind of awards are going to read. ERA, Garrett Crochet, 2.67, which, again, is stupidly good. Tarek Skubal's is a 2.18. That's unheard of as I look at Paul Skenes being above him at 1.98 with 10 wins and 9 losses. What a crime it is to keep that guy in Pittsburgh. Oh, my God. Anyways, 2.18 for Skubal, 2.67 for Crochet. Skubal has walked 27 batters to Crochet's 42. Crochet has struck out 218, Skubal 216. Hits given up, it is 124 for Skubal, and it is 150 for Crochet. Home runs, 20-15. And Crochet's made 28 starts, Skubal 27. 18 quality starts for Skubal, 18 as well for Garrett Crochet. Wins, not that it really matters in this conversation, is 14-12 in favor of Crochet. So it's become less. That's been the quote-unquote advancement in the Cy Young conversation, is they no longer consider wins to be as strong of a determinant for this award. And the most famous example is Jacob DeGrom with the Mets when I think he was either 500 or sub-500, but had like a 1.7 ERA or something stupid like that, and he ended up winning. So wins you can kind of throw out. Both are winning, you know, 2 to 3 times as many times as they're losing. But the ERA is just too different. And the prevailing theory coming out of Crochet's last start where he kind of struggled was, oh, well, he just pitched himself out of any potential long shot Cy Young conversation. And I think there's I think there's kind of something to that. I mean, six innings, nine hits, seven runs, all earned, four home runs, no walks, four strikeouts. His ERA went up from 240 to 267. I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but that is the kind of thing. That was a prohibitive appearance there for Garrett Crochet. And it kind of left me with a few questions for what the month of September is going to look like. But again, it could just be anomalous. He had a 3.19 ERA in the month of August, which is still very good. And if you pull out an outing against Houston where he gave up five runs in four innings, again, we're talking about a month where in the remaining four starts, he gave up six earned runs. So there's just been a couple blips on the radar that kind of make you scratch your head. But I appreciated the effort. I will parrot that to anybody who wants to try to argue against Garrett Crochet in future conversations about this. But I just think that the general voting public for awards like this haven't advanced to the level of the stats that they look at, where they're going to consider the top end and bottom end of the opponents that are being faced like that. You're going to get a lot of ERA. You'll get strikeouts. You'll get walks. You'll get home runs. And pretty much anything that's not wins and losses, because that's the one stat that's kind of been deemed as archaic. Everything else that you see on that first page on ESPN or Baseball Reference or what have you, that's what's going to be counted. So the race that you'll see, the three that you'll see as the finalists, barring any kind of absolutely cataclysmic events, are Scooble, Hunter Brown, and Crochet. And then it's a little bit more interesting over in the NL. Skeens is your far and away runaway winner. Freddy Peralta from Minnesota, Christopher Sanchez from the Phillies, and then Jacob deGrom from the Texans. Those are kind of the four that you're looking at. So I would love to see Crochet win. I don't think he's going to. I think there was also an argument potentially for Roman Anthony to get some Rookie of the Year consideration, but there are also a few incredible first-year players in the league outside of him that are going to be getting some of those nominations as well. So we'll leave that conversation there on the Boston Red Sox. We'll pick that back up as we get closer to game time. Again, game two of the three-game series, Red Sox and the Arizona Diamondbacks are coming your way. 7:10 pregame, I'll have you for that. 8:10 first pitch, Lucas Giolito on the mound for the Boston Red Sox. When we return, we'll pivot over to the New England Patriots. Amazingly enough, in 24 hours' time from as we sit here right now, we will know the score of the first game of the New England Patriots season in 2025. What an offseason it was. There's the understatement of the century, but it feels like it's been a couple years between when the Patriots beat the third string Bills and when they kick off against the Las Vegas Raiders. It's been eventful. We'll go through some winners and losers from the offseason and the preseason for the New England Patriots leading up to kickoff for game one tomorrow. We'll do that next.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? The real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? The three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.